Okay. So this week, when I saw the email, we have three or four missions to discuss. A little more gruesome, more unappetizing than usual. But there are also mitzvahs to discuss. And that's the prohibition of eating forbidden fats, called chelev in Hebrew. The prohibition of eating blood, dam. Also, we'll touch upon two other mitzvahs, which is a mitzvah to cover the blood after you slaughter a bird, or slaughter what's called a chaya, which would be a wild animal. We'll discuss that. There's a mitzvah to cover the blood in dirt. And the fourth mitzvah we'll hopefully touch on today will be the prohibition of eating aver min ha-chai, which means eating a limb from a live animal. Which also does not sound so appetizing, but that's another prohibition. So before we get into these, I'll just introduce it with a verse from the Torah. The Torah says in Parashas Re'eh, when it talks about the prohibition of eating blood, it says, Rak chazak, you should be very strong. Exercise restraint. Levil tiyachol adam, not to eat blood. Ki adam hu anafesh, because the blood is the soul. Velo soul nechol anafesh yim abasur, you should not eat the soul with the flesh. The Torah introduces the prohibition of eating blood with the term bichazak, be strong. Exercise restraint. You don't see that term used in the Torah anywhere else, to my knowledge, when it comes to any mitzvah, besides when it comes to eating blood. So it sounds like, strangely enough, that blood requires an extra measure of restraint not to eat blood. And for us it sounds strange, because none of us really have a lust. We have to go eat some blood today, unless we're a vampire or something. Like, I mean, beyond that, no one feels a need to eat blood. But the Torah says, rachazak, be very, very strong not to eat blood. So there's two lessons that we learned from this. Rashi quotes one, and there's another one in the Mishnah. And they're kind of opposites, but they're both are two sides of the same coin. Rashi quotes, why does the Torah say, be strong, exercise extreme restraint not to eat blood? So Rashi explains, one thing he says is that it sounds like people very much wanted to eat blood, which the different commentators explain, back in those days, the idolaters had a lot of services with blood. So part of the draw to idolatry included using blood, eating blood, gathering around blood, etc. That's one thing Rashi says. Rashi then quotes from Rabbi Shimon ben Azai, who says that the Torah is teaching us an important lesson, which is how much restraint is called for in mitzvahs. Because blood is something which we don't have a lust for. We don't have a drive, I have to eat some blood today. Yet the Torah says, be very, very careful, exercise restraint not to eat blood. Because we know that our yetzer hara, draw towards evil, is a very strong thing. And there are times where even a prohibition or a mitzvah, inappropriate act, an immoral act, unethical act, is something which we would never have dreamed of doing, we end up doing it. We look back and say, how did that happen? So he's saying that blood is an example for that. Eating blood is not something which we're drawn towards. It's not something we have a desire to do. But yet, even that, you have to be very careful. Be on your guard. Keep yourself in check, because the Yetzer Hara is very, very powerful. Our inclination towards evil really can draw us in the wrong direction in one moment. And you always have to be on guard, even for a very easy mitzvah. So eating blood, or not to eat blood, is an easy mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which doesn't require much work, not to eat the blood. But yet, the Torah there says, be very, very careful, be very strong, exercise restraint not to do it, because it's a lesson for us for all mitzvahs. Even the easy mitzvahs require control, require us to keep in check. And never become passive in the observance of mitzvahs. Always be on guard for yourself. So that's the lesson that Rashi says. Another commentary, the Rashbam, he explains from a different angle. He says that not eating blood could actually be a difficult mitzvah, not because we're drawn towards it, but because to actually remove the blood from an animal takes a lot of work. You have to really check over the animal well. There's blood absorbed in all the different limbs of an animal, which is why we have the practice of salting meat, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So the Rashbam says practically, even though you don't have a draw towards blood, you have to be very careful in the halacha. In the process of taking the blood out of the animal, you have to be careful to do it correctly, or else you'll end up eating blood. So he says that the warning is kind of a practical warning. But Rashi, quoting from Rashi ben Azai, is saying that it's a life lesson, that when it comes to observing mitzvahs, never think things are too easy. Never lose your guard, never lose control, because you'll end up doing a mitzvah which you thought was so easy, you never violate, and suddenly you're violating the mitzvah. So everyone can think about a time in life where there's something that you never dreamed of doing, which you thought was inappropriate. You then went ahead and did it. You look back and say, why did I just do that? Whether it be insulting someone, whether it be an unethical act. I mean, everyone has some point in life that it's something they can't believe they just did. Why did I just do what I just did? I would have never dreamed of doing it. It was something which wasn't even a challenge for me, and suddenly I did the wrong thing. So because the Yetzer Hara has his tricks and his ways of getting you to do even things which seem to be easy, you think you already have it, in control, and suddenly you've lost control in that area. So that's one of the lessons of the Torah when it says, be very strong, exercise restraint, not to eat blood. The Mishnah then gives another interpretation. The Mishnah says, it's in Maseches Makos, very last chapter of Maseches Makos. Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe quotes this. He quotes the same verse in the Torah, be strong not to eat blood. And he also mentions an important lesson. He says that, and this is more on an encouraging, positive note. He says, Mayim Adam, Shenashu Shalom Katsum Imenu. Look at blood. Blood is something which we find disgusting. I mean, none of us want to drink a cup of blood. It sounds repulsive to us. The Torah says, if you separate from eating blood, you get reward. You get eternal reward not eating blood, which is a pretty easy mitzvah, it seems, not to eat blood. The Torah, if you look here in context, it says, don't eat it, that Hashem will do good for you and for your children after you, because you're doing the right thing in God's eyes. So the Torah guarantees that there will be goodness that comes from not eating blood, which is a very simple thing, not to eat blood. It doesn't seem like a difficult mitzvah. So it says, Gezel v'arayis, theft and immorality. That we do have a draw towards. We have a lust for money. People have a lust for women. That's something which is a natural draw, which we have to struggle with. So Purush Mehen, if you separate from these areas where you actually do have a lust for, so how much more so will you have merit for yourself, for your generation, for your children, until the end of time? So the lesson from blood is that blood seems to be a very easy mitzvah to do, and yet there the Torah guarantees reward. So mitzvahs which are challenging, so how much more so will we receive reward for those mitzvahs? So we have to understand that even the easy mitzvahs give us reward. I mean, God says, don't murder, and we refrain from murder, and I hope that none of us have a lust for murdering. But we get reward for that, because we didn't murder. It says, don't eat blood, and none of us, I don't think, will have a lust, a drive to eat blood, so we don't eat blood. And you know, God says, I'll give you reward for that. So certainly those things are challenging to us, that we have to struggle with and overcome. Those things, certainly the reward will be many, many fold greater than the reward for blood. And you have a source of that also in Pirkei Avos. It says, Lefum Tzara Agra, based on your struggle is your reward. So that which is more difficult for you, and you're able to overcome that challenge, that gives you the greatest reward. So blood has its reward, and that's not a challenge for us. And there's those mitzvahs which have more of a challenge, and the reward is multiplied based on how difficult the mitzvah was for you. And it's subjective. Every person is going to have their own unique challenges. But God rewards based on the challenge. If we overcome a larger challenge, we get greater reward. Yes and no. I mean, it's not explicit here, but we do have many sources throughout the Gemara, throughout Midrashim, which say that the main reward we're going to get is going to be in the coming world. So we don't necessarily know where the reward is going to be. Some mitzvahs it says you do get reward in this world for, but it says for most mitzvahs, the general rule is that the reward will be in the next world. So that's our introduction to eating blood. It's some interesting lessons that you find in the source of eating blood. Yeah.
Did you say the blood is the soul?
We can talk about that. It does say that. The blood is the soul. We'll talk about that point. That's an important point. So before we get back to blood, I want to talk about fat. So it's called, in Hebrew, you have two types of fat in an animal. One's called chelev, that's the forbidden fats, and one's called shuman, which means permissible fats. We know that we eat meat, and we do have fat on our meat, but there are parts of the meat which are removed. There are people who are well-trained in kashrus facilities which cut away the forbidden fats when they're producing kosher meat. We discussed the job, I think, a few weeks ago of deveining the meat, taking out all the forbidden veins and also forbidden fats. There's forbidden veins and forbidden fats in an animal, and someone has to do the dirty work and take out for us. And these people do it. We should have a lot of gratitude for those people who sit there, with that dirty job of pulling out fats and veins from an animal day in and day out for us, as an aside. But there is a prohibition of eating forbidden fats. Which fats those are, I'll refer you to biology books and descriptions. I can't tell you the biology between which fats are which. I'm not trained in removing these fats, but there are certain fats which are forbidden, and some fats which are permissible. The prohibition, just to give the halacha, applies to what's called a behema and not a chaya. There's two words in the Torah used for animals, as opposed to fowl. But there's two words used for animals. There's one's called chaya, one's called behema. A behema, for lack of better translation, I would describe as a farm animal. A cow, a goat, a sheep, those are behemas.
Domesticated,
though, also might mean someone's dog. I don't mean a dog by that. You can also domesticate, zoo animals might be domesticated to some degree also. That's why I don't want to say domesticated. But I guess, most domesticated farm animals would be considered behema. And chaya would be the ones which live in the wild. A deer, for instance, is a kosher chaya, is a deer. So deer we don't call behemoth, we call it a chaya. It's one that lives in the wild, it's not a farm animal. Yeah, it's kosher. So that's a chaya. So the prohibition of forbidden fats applies to what's called a behemoth, the farm animals, and not to a chaya, which is the wild animals. There's probably a better translation, but that's the best I can do for you in terms of behemoth and chaya. We'll call it farm animals versus, yeah.
Chaya also a beast,
okay. A beast also is kind of a vague term. I don't know. You call it a wild beast versus a domesticated animal. I don't know. I mean, people use a term like in Yiddish, the Vildachaya. People act like wild beasts, you know? But that's much more the slang than the actual translation. So if someone were to eat a deer, there's no fats to remove in a deer. But there are fats to remove in a cow or in a goat or in a sheep if you're eating cow, goat, or sheep meat. And this also doesn't apply to poultry. Only applies to behemoth. What are some of the meanings and symbolism behind this prohibition? What's wrong with these fats? So first and foremost, when one was to give an offering in the Beis HaMikdash, a sacrifice, so the two main parts of every offering would be burning the fats and offering the blood onto the altar. The fats would be burned and the blood would be sprinkled on the side of the altar. So we're talking about that relates to the prohibition of eating blood and the prohibition of eating fats. So these fats, which would have been brought in the temple, if you were to bring a sacrifice, these would be part of what was burned on the altar, so those we don't eat in everyday life. That's one, it's a very simple explanation of it. Well, that's one reason given. It encourages us to give sacrifices, and it also reminds us that even nowadays, without a temple, the sacrificial service is still alive and well, and we hope in the future we'll be able to perform that service once again. So the prohibition of forbidden fats remains this very day, with the anticipation in the future that we will be able to offer those fats on the Mizbeach, on the altar, once again. So that's one explanation given. And Rabbi Hirsch explains that it's supposed to keep alive in our minds the mitzvah of offering sacrifices. We think that it's been 2,000 years since the temple was destroyed. We no longer offer animal offerings to God. But that has to remain fresh in our minds. So we avoid eating these fats of the animal, and also the blood we'll talk about, to remind us of sacrificial service. So that's one point made.
But isn't there a difference of opinion whether in the future, when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, whether we in fact will be offering animal sacrifices or not?
The simple mainstream approach is certainly there will be sacrifices.
There will be?
Yeah, for sure.
I've heard
such opinions quoted, I can't quote who they are, but I'm saying that the mainstream typical approach by most of the mainstream commentaries.
Allah rejects it because in their prayer they don't have the concluding sentence in their Shemana Esra that says when we're giving the offering in the future. I'm just guessing this, but they omit that sentence that says when are we offering.
Okay, it's interesting. I mean, certainly in our liturgy, and certainly the mainstream approach is that there will be Ashkenazic liturgy. I mean, even from things to source in the Gemara, I mean, the very mainstream approach seems to be there will be sacrificial service once again. So that's how Rabbi Hirsch describes. It should keep it fresh in our minds, that mitzvah. The commentary of Barbanel has a different approach to the symbolism of this prohibition. He says that fat is representative of desire. Desire for food, desire a lust for this world, as it says, "Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat," that the Jewish people became fattened and then they rebelled against God. There's a quote from Parsha Hazinu. You find throughout the Tanakh that when we became a little bit too satiated with this world, that's when we started shirking off religion. So he says that the symbolism of offering fat on the altar and not eating the fat is that we have to make sure that our lusts are channeled towards God and not channeled towards our bodies. So fat, which represents our lust for this world, our lust for food, that should be channeled in service of God, which should be on the altar, and we're not allowed to have that in our body. Let's go straight to the altar. That's how the Barbanel describes it. So there's two different lessons and messages from the prohibition of eating fat. Now the next one is eating blood. Like we discussed earlier, one's not to eat blood. This prohibition applies to animals and to poultry. We can't eat the blood. Interestingly, fish blood is okay to eat, and we discussed there are kosher locusts. Kosher locust blood is also okay to eat. So, prohibition of blood doesn't apply to fish or locusts, which means, for us, it's relevant to fish. That's why we don't have to salt fish prior to eating it. We ought to eat fish blood. That's not a problem. On the other hand, if it sounds disgusting, but if one was to just take a bunch of fish blood in a cup and drink it, that'd be an issue of Maris Ayin, because it appears like you're drinking prohibited blood, so you shouldn't drink that blood. There is a discussion also, luckily, what about human blood? I mean, obviously we're talking about cannibals, but let's think about you get a cut and you want to suck the blood off your cut or something. So there also the issue would only be a Maris Ayin issue. So if it's something which is visible, one should avoid it. The Mara gives a case. You take a bite of a loaf of bread and you have a cut in your mouth and you bleed on the bread. So you shouldn't take a bite of that piece with the blood on it because then people see there's blood on the bread that you're taking a bite of. But if you have a cut in your mouth and you're just, the blood's going in your mouth, that's not a problem because nobody sees that. So that's where it would be relevant with human blood. There's no prohibition on human blood per se. It's also only an issue of appearing like animal blood, Maris Ayin. So done in a way which nobody can see, human blood, that's not an issue either. But there's a prohibition on animal blood and blood of poultry. So that's why the way that we take care of the blood is we have a process called melicha. We salt the meat, whether it be the chicken, whether it be the beef, we salt it. The salting process, the salt's supposed to draw out blood, plus there's a soaking process along with the salting process. So between the soaking and the salting, that it should remove all the forbidden blood. And the assumption is what's ever left after that process is not forbidden blood. But halakhically, if one does see like a red spot or like a bruise, you should kind of cut that off your meat when you're eating, just as an aside.
I think there's also another step too, which is soaking and salting. I think there's washing. I mean, isn't there like a washing off?
That's part of the soaking. I'm including that soaking. Yeah, there's part of it. You're right. But I'm including that soaking. Yeah.
Now, what about that? You said it's forbidden to eat the blood of the fowl.
Yeah. So same thing, we also soak in salt, it's the same.
Soak in salt?
Yeah, right.
The liver with the chicken is an issue.
The liver, I guess, so the liver is, I'll talk about that one second.
Okay.
Now you're bringing it up, I wasn't going to talk about it, let's talk about the liver. But for typical parts of a chicken, of a turkey, of any meat we eat, the way we do it, there's a process, I mean, there's a halakhic process how to do it, how you soak in salt, did it a certain amount of time, a certain type of salt, kosher salt. Yeah, right.
I remember my mother did it.
So I don't remember this, but you go back a few decades, it wasn't done in the butcher shops, it was done in people's houses.
Right.
So now we're lucky that the mess remains in the butcher.
It's
yeah,
service.
It's a service,
that's
right.
Why
yeah.
Kosher meat is all expensive.
Yeah, a lot of services involved.
It's not just the meat, it's because you're getting the services along with it.
Right, so that's so between the soaking and salting, that removes the blood. The liver is a different issue because the liver is so bloody. The assumption is the soaking and salting will not take care of the blood. So the only way that one can kosher liver is by roasting it. If you roast a liver in a way which, not in a pan, but in a way where the blood drips out of it, so the roasting draws out the blood too. Like a broiler pan or something, right. So the broiler pan, you roast it on a barbecue, you roast it on an open fire. That's the way which you'd kosher a liver. But salting does not accomplish the ruining the blood of a liver, because the liver is so bloody. In the stores, a lot of times they label the liver as must be broiled before usage. I think that's a misleading statement because it does need to be broiled, but if you put it just into a normal pan in the oven and broil it, it's still prohibited. You have to have it in a broiling pan where the blood drips out. So I think there'd be a better terminology to use in the stores for must be broiled. Someone might be misled and think, I can put it in just a aluminum foil pan, put it in the oven and the broiler, and then it's okay to eat. And really, if it's not dripping into something else, you can't eat that liver. So that's just an aside. So roasting also accomplishes the same thing as salting for any piece of meat. So if you want to take a chicken that was never salted and barbecue it, that'd be okay because the assumption is that roasting on open fire also draws out all the blood, just like salting draws out the blood. So that's the same assumption halakhically. So typically when you buy meat nowadays, it's already salted, so you can, whether you want to cook it or roast it, it's fine. But if you had a chicken or a piece of meat that was never salted, your two options would be to soak and salt it in the proper method, or to roast it on an open fire. And either way, that would draw out all the forbidden blood.
But if you're buying kosher meat, it's...
Yeah, nowadays kosher meat is typically all salt. I'm just saying if you happen in a situation where you don't have salted meat, that's what you would do. Yeah, I don't know. Nowadays, anything in a store you're going to find has already been soaked and salted and is taken care of. So some of the message, the lesson behind the prohibition of eating blood. So number one, simply like I said before, the main part of every sacrifice was the sprinkling of the blood. In every sacrifice, the main part was not the burning of the meat or the fats on the altar, but it was the blood being sprinkled on the side of the altar. So a lot of times we think that the main part of sacrifice is burning the meat on the altar. That wasn't true. The main part of the sacrifice was sprinkling the blood on the side of the altar. So again, avoiding eating blood is a reminder of the sacrificial service. It's telling us that this blood belongs on the altar, not in your body. And the same idea as we explained when it comes to fat, the same concept applied to blood. Now, there's a deeper meaning to blood, deeper symbolism, which is what Lou pointed out before that I read in the verse earlier, and I'll read it again. It says, Ki adam hu ha-nefesh. The blood is the soul. Lo soha nefesh ima basar. One should not eat the soul along with the meat. So there's, and it says this many times in the Torah. There's another verse that says, Nefesh kol basar damo benafsho hu. The soul of every of all flesh, the blood is in the soul. The soul of every flesh is its blood. If you eat the blood, you get the spiritual punishment of kares. It's a very severe punishment. So the Torah repeats many times this phrase that the blood is the soul. The soul is the blood. The blood is the soul. Very fascinating thing. Yeah.
I always had the idea that the soul was in the blood rather than the blood was the soul.
So the we'll explain a little bit what it means. But the Torah words it in a few different ways. One place it's worded, Adamo benafsho hu, its blood is in its soul. One place it words it. But that's a harder one to understand. Another place it words it, Nefesh kol basar damo hu, the blood is the soul. And here it says the blood is the soul. So let's explain a little bit what I think it means, how I understand it to mean. But the, if you look at the, I should do it here. If you look at the creation, yeah, my handy chumash. If you look at the creation of the world, in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, so it talks about the creation of animals. And it says, I'll find a quote for you. God said, Totzei eretz nefesh chaya lemina. The land should sprout forth a nefesh chaya, a living nefesh, a living soul, to its species, and then discusses the creation of animals. So there is a word of nefesh, of soul, which applies to animals. Animals do have some level of soul. Human beings, we'll discuss, have a different level of soul, a higher soul. Animals have something called a nefesh. It's called nefesh chaya. The Torah calls it nefesh chaya, living soul. And this is simply, we take a soul on the most basic level. The rabbis tell us there's five levels of a soul, of a human soul. Animals have this lowest level. And this is, I would say simply, is what animates, what keeps it going. What gives it its instincts, its drives, its emotions? It's not a physical thing. We call that there's a spiritual element to the animal as well. So what animates the animal? What keeps the heart pumping? What gives it instinct? What gives it ability to function and to conquer territory and to hunt and to ambush? It's a piece of meat otherwise, but there's a soul in an animal as well, which animates the animal and gives it life. That's what we call the soul. The life force, I guess, is the soul of the animal. And that's the very lowest level of soul. The soul of a human obviously goes much higher. It has a connection with God. It's a much more spiritual element. But the very lowest level of a soul is that part of the person or of the animal which animates in the physical world. And it gives us emotions and ambitions and drives in the physical world. So an animal is not just a piece of meat. An animal has a soul to it. An animal has a deeper element to it beyond just a piece of flesh. Now that's the first point. So one understanding of the prohibition of eating the blood, the Torah says that the soul resides in the blood. See, the word used is the blood is the soul, hadam hu anefesh. I don't know how to take that literally or figuratively or what, but I think the message of it is that we look at the fact that blood is the life force of the animal. The blood is what takes all the nutrients, spreads it around the entire body of the animal. The blood's constantly on the move, it's constantly pumping, it's constantly giving life to the animal. So that's the blood is the seat of the nefesh, of the soul of the animal. That's the seat. That's where we find the representation of the soul of the animal. It's in the blood, as we view it. So whether it be literally or symbolically, I don't know. But we say that the seat of the animal's soul is in its blood. So therefore, if the seat of the animal's soul is in its blood, which means that the higher element of the animal is found in the blood, so the animal has two parts. The animal is a piece of meat, a very physical piece of flesh. The animal has within it the blood, which represents to us the higher part of the animal, the soul, which gives the animal life and ambition and whatever thoughts and feelings and emotions the animal might have is all found, it's all based on that soul of the animal, which we find in the blood. So since that's the similarity you find between a human being and an animal, and that's the highest part of the animal, so many of the early commentaries explain it's inappropriate that a nefesh, a human being who is a higher being in this world, should eat the higher part of the animal, which is its counterpart. So there is that similarity as it were, between the animal and the human being. So let's call it the immoral for us to eat the blood of an animal, because now we're eating something of our sort. The flesh of the animal is just meat, it's physical, it's flesh, so the Torah says that you're allowed to eat that, that's not a problem. The blood of the animal, which represents its higher elements, that's off limits to us. I would say it's an immoral act to eat the blood of an animal, since that represents the higher spiritual part of an animal. So that should not be consumed by a human being. Now it's interesting, because initially we weren't allowed to eat meat at all. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden weren't allowed to eat meat. Meat only became permissible after the flood. Since the animals were saved with Noah, and Noah saved the animals, so then at that point God said that meat is permissible to you, just not the blood. Because, I guess essentially, even eating meat in the beginning of creation was considered something which was off limits to the human being, because the animal was a living being, so to eat a living being was inappropriate. After the flood, the animals were saved by Noah, and therefore we were given the permission to eat the meat, but at least that spiritual element still off limits to us. That spiritual element of the animal, the blood, where you find the spirit of the animal, that shouldn't be consumed. So that's one symbolism of not eating blood. There's another element to it, kind of an equal and opposite element. So on the one hand, there's a similarity between a human being and an animal in the blood, because the animal has its nefesh in the blood, its soul, its spirit, and we're spiritual beings. We have a spirit, we have a soul, and that's the high ground of an animal. Actually, has a point where it might be similar to the human being. Now, Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch explains that there is an opposite meaning to that, as called equal and opposite. One should never be misled to think that even though human beings and animals both have souls, don't think there's actually a common denominator between the two. The human soul and the animal soul are totally different. The animal soul, as the Torah describes, comes forth from the ground. I just read to you the verse, I put it away. It says that God said to the ground, spring forth a living soul to create the animals. So the animal soul, whatever it means, by the Torah's wording, the literal verse says that the animal soul springs forth from the ground. The human soul is the exact opposite. The human soul, God, it says that God created Adam from dust of the earth, that's his body, and breathed into God the nishmas chayim, the neshama, the soul of life, the breath of life came from God. So there's a direct, let's call it a kiss from God, which put the soul into the human being. The soul of the animal came forth from the ground. So even though we might use the term soul for both of them in English, we'll call it even a nefesh. Human being has a nefesh as well. We also have four other levels of our soul. But we all have that thing called a nefesh, but the human soul is straight from heaven, straight from God, breathed into Adam with the breath of life, and the animal soul came forth from the ground. So obviously there's a lot of deeper understanding here, which I don't fully understand, and we're not going to get into right now, but we see the simple wording of the verse tells us a big difference. There's a soul from the ground for an animal, and a soul from God, a breath of God into the human being. So Rabbi Hirsch explains that despite the fact that we both have souls, never think that the animal soul and the human soul are compatible. They're totally different. They're different types of souls. So to take in blood of an animal would be ingesting an animal soul into the human body, and that's an inappropriate thing. An animal has animalistic ambitions. The animal soul drives it to its animal instincts, which is food, reproduction, survival of the fittest, what are animalistic instincts it has. The human soul drives us in a different direction. Yeah?
I don't know how this relates to souls, but if you've heard the story about dogs who save people's lives, they have different kind of instinct for a human being, or they could be a watchdog. So how does that relate to souls?
I don't know. It's very interesting. You know, I was talking about this topic a few years ago, I think, and someone else brought up a similar question. I don't know. I mean, you do hear these rare stories of animals like going out of their way to save someone or do something. I don't know. I'm not sure the answer to that question. We're speaking generalities here for sure. I don't know.
And second to that, what about when we get an animal organ inserted in a human being?
So that's a very good question. I mean, when it comes down to it, that's a question usually of life and death for the human being. So there's no issue of using an animal. So it could be, on the one hand, you don't want to incorporate an animal into your body. On the other hand, you need it. So, you know, my father had a valve replaced. Yeah, excuse me, a valve replaced. So he's offered the choice between a pig valve or a mechanical valve. And there's different benefits and disadvantages to both. He actually chose the mechanical valve, but my uncle had the same operation, and he chose the pig valve. You know, so my uncle has a pig valve in his body now, which saved his life. It's something he needed in his heart. So ultimately, I guess the thing of having an animal incorporated into your system is not a pleasant thought, but you know, if you need it, you need it. That's not a problem. But for the Torah to say that you can go ahead and enjoy eating the soul of an animal, the Torah says that's off limits to you, because that's something which you should not be incorporating to yourself animalistic ambitions. So if the soul of the animal represents its ambitions and drives and instincts as an animal, and we're supposed to have different ambitions and drives and instincts as human beings, so how could we take that soul of the animal, which stands kind of for the opposite of our goals in life? Our soul pushes us towards heaven, and the animal soul just keeps it on the ground. So the Torah says, don't eat the soul of the animal, the blood, which represents the soul of the animal, because you can't incorporate that into your system. Yeah.
So are you saying that the animal blood, the animal soul, contaminates our soul?
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know if it could contaminate the soul, but at least it might put into us drives which are not, there should not be human drives. Because you are what you eat, again. We always say you are what you eat. And it does have an effect on you. And one, whether it be spiritual or physically, these things have an effect on you. So, yeah, so taking in an animal soul could make us more animalistic, I guess is the point. The flesh of the animal is a piece of meat. There's nothing to it anymore. Once the animal is dead and the blood is gone, so now it's just a piece of meat. And therefore, that's not going to affect you. Again, we're going to say it's kosher meat, so we don't have the issues of non-kosher meat. It doesn't affect the person in that way. But the blood, which represents the soul, the life force of the animal, that's something which remains animal even after death. That should be avoided at all costs, the Torah says. Yeah?
I have a question. You're talking about the nefesh and the neshama. What is the difference between translations?
Translations, it's hard to have different translations. I mean, the rabbis tell us there's five levels of the neshama. One's called nefesh, neshama, ruach, chaya, yechida. Those are the five. The translations, I mean, we all say in English soul, and soul.
Okay.
So it's hard to translate differently. I mean, there's a different discussion as to what the differences are between them. I mean, obviously it's a deeper concept. There are ways that we can explain the different elements of the soul. I don't get off into that topic right now. But in translation, it's hard to translate them. It's beyond soul and spirit. That's all I can really say. I don't know what else to say with those translations. So that's the one symbolism of not eating blood. So it's the animalistic soul versus the human soul, which are not compatible. And ultimately, we understand, though, that we said the main part of the sacrificial service was the blood being sprinkled on the altar, because what's appropriate to offer to God, that's the spiritual element of the animals, is the main part going to God. When it comes to going to the temple and trying to get atonement from God, trying to connect with God, achieve the heights of what a sacrifice was supposed to do to a human being, so we use the highest part of the animal, which is the blood, to accomplish that goal. So that's why the blood is the main part of every sacrifice, because that's the way the higher part of the animal. So which leads us then to the next mitzvah, which is there's a mitzvah to cover the blood of an animal. When one does a slaughter, a shechita, so there's a mitzvah to cover that blood in dirt. Now, interestingly, I don't have an explanation as to why this is, at least not offhand. This mitzvah does not apply to behema. We distinguish before between behema and chaya. And there's a mitzvah to cover the blood of poultry. There's a mitzvah to cover the blood of a chaya, which would be the wild animal. But the farm animal, when someone slaughters a cow, there's a mitzvah to cover that blood. The mitzvah is only to cover, so if you were to slaughter a deer, you have to cover the blood of the deer. If you were to slaughter a chicken, you cover the blood of a chicken. So why it doesn't apply to behema, that would be a different discussion. I don't have an answer offhand to that. But that's the Torah's mitzvah only applies to the chaya or to poultry. So just to understand a little of the symbolism behind covering the blood of the animal, it really plays in hand to not eating the blood. Many commentaries explain it has to do with the prohibition of eating blood. Since we're prohibited to eat the blood, so we remind ourselves not to eat it by covering it up in dirt, so we kind of bury it and get it out of here. Also, it was used. Blood was used, as we mentioned before, in idolatrous services. So they would actually slaughter animals, and they would all gather around the blood, and I don't know what they would do. They would do things with the blood. So we say the blood is not for us. We cover it up, and we get it out of our sight, so we don't use it for idolatry. The Sefer Achinuch actually gives a different explanation, which he says that it's teaches us a sensitivity. There's a certain measure of cruelty. If you're eating the animal's nefesh, its soul, we already said the blood is the soul of the animal. So to eat the animal, not to eat the soul, but to eat the meat of the animal while the soul is in front of you, that's a cruel act. There's a human side of this animal, which you're staring at, and then you're taking a bite of it as you stare at the human side of the animal. So Sefer Chinuch says that how could you eat an animal and view it as a piece of meat when you're staring at the face of its higher element, which is the blood? So we cover the blood, and now we can eat the meat. But while the blood's sitting in front of us, to eating the meat would be a cruel act, in that I'm right now thinking about the spiritual higher element of the animal, and then I'm taking a bite out of my chicken. That doesn't make sense to do at the same time. So you cover the blood. And Rav Hirsch, again, he describes that this plays into the idea we said before, how the animal soul and the human soul are so different. The animal soul originated in the ground, as we mentioned before. God said to the ground, you know, bring forth the soul of the animals. Therefore, we put it back into the ground once again. We cover that blood to show that the animal soul is of this world. It's something which is of the dirt, it's of the ground, and it's rejected from the human world. It's not. Don't think it's compatible to the human soul. And in a sense, it's a burial for the animal. The animal doesn't get burial, but its blood gets burial, because its blood is its spiritual part. So the animal's blood gets its burial as the spiritual part of the animal. The flesh, you can do what you want with it. The flesh, we say, is just physical meat, and you can do what you want with the flesh. But since the blood itself is its spiritual element, so on the one hand, we proclaim it's not part of the human world, it's not compatible with us, our souls are totally different. On the other hand, we cover it up in dirt and show that it deserves its proper burial as well. It came from the ground, it goes back to the ground, like the human body does. And that's the soul of the animal. So the nefesh of a behemah, the soul of an animal, can never become part of a man. But yet, it does deserve its proper respect, and it gets its, we'll call it its burial, by being covered up in the dirt after slaughter. And this one final connected prohibition, we'll finish with this, is a prohibition of Eiver Min HaChai, not to eat the limb of a live animal. This is, interestingly enough, is a prohibition which applies in the Noahide laws as well. It's not only for Jews, for non-Jews as well, this law. One of the seven Noahide laws is not to eat the limb of a living animal. Which means you walk over to the cow, you tear off its leg, and you take a bite. That's what that means. It sounds gruesome, it sounds disgusting, but it's a Torah prohibition, and it's a prohibition that applies across the board, Jew and non-Jew alike. So, what's the meaning behind this? On the one hand, I mean, it sounds disgusting, but it's certainly cruelty. I mean, it's a living animal, and you're ripping off a limb from the animal and taking a bite. There's no worse form of cruelty to an animal than that. Not only are you causing it pain, is it torturous, but then you're taking a bite of it. Now that seems to be an extremely cruel act, which we have to avoid, trying to develop sensitivity in the human being. You have to be sensitive to the fact that not to cause that amount of pain to an animal, to the extent where you're taking its limb while it's still alive and taking a bite out of it. That's a terrible thing. The Rambam also says that, and as he says, he often explains mitzvahs in the context of idolatry. So he says also the idolaters used to use these limbs in their services, so we avoid these limbs. So the Rambam says that as well. But many of the commentaries explain this with cruelty. The Rambam himself says it, the Sefer HaChinuch says it, that it's an extremely cruel thing. It's really the height of cruelty. To think to rip off the limb of a living animal and take a bite is the height of human cruelty, and therefore we have to avoid it. One other point made is the commentary that Ralbag explains, that it's to distance us from being gluttonous. Because what does it mean, you're ripping off the animal's limb? It means you can't wait to slaughter the animal, cook it, take a bite. You just want to grab it and take a bite. So why can't you wait 10 minutes and properly prepare it? So it's just ethical, or let's call it good manners. The human being has to learn patience, control their appetites, their impulses, and not just grab a piece of meat and eat it. So it says, if one is just ripped off the limb while it's still alive, that shows that you just can't wait to eat. So that's an obviously terrible character trait, and you have to avoid that. And then Rav Hirsch explains, in line with everything we've said until now, Rav Hirsch explains that just like the blood of an animal is forbidden after death, because the blood itself contains the soul of the animal, when the animal is alive, that soul has mastery over the entire animal. When the animal is alive, even the meat of the animal is also controlled by the animal's soul. When the animal has a brain, the animal functions, the animal moves its legs, and it moves around its body, and the whole body at that point has a soul impacting it. The animal's dead, so what's left is the blood, which is the seed of the soul, and then some dead meat. When the animal is alive, the meat is still subject to the soul. So if you're going to rip a limb off an animal while it's still alive and eat it, so you are now eating an animal's soul. So similar to the provision of blood after death. In the animal's lifetime, the whole animal is a living being. The whole animal has a spiritual element to it, in that it's in control of it. The soul is in control of the animal. And therefore, to take a limb off the animal while it's alive, that limb is essentially the nefesh of the animal as well. It's also the soul of the animal. So once the animal dies, we look at an animal as a piece of meat, and the blood as the higher element. The animal's alive. The whole animal is a living, functioning being, controlled by its animalistic soul, but it has a soul to it. It has this nefesh to it. And therefore, to eat that meat while it's alive is really the same problem as consuming its blood after death. It's that issue. So that's Eivor Min HaChai, which and this mitzvah applies across the board to Jew and non-Jew alike. I think it's the only eating mitzvah which is applicable to non-Jews, is this, to my knowledge. I think that the other six Noahide laws have nothing to do with eating. So the one eating mitzvah that non-Jews have is not to eat the womb of a live animal. So I guess that would put this one as, you know, the absolute worst and most cruel way to eat food. That's what that sounds like. You have any questions? Yeah.
Sort of similar idea. It's not really an animal, but fish that we for lobsters.
Yeah.
And, you know, you buy lobster alive, and they put it in a pot, and they cook it. Like, they basically cook it alive.
Right.
So I don't know if that's related.
So, probably the cruelty is there, but that wouldn't be under this prohibition, because once you're eating it, once you're ready to eat it, it's dead. So it's only if you rip off the limb when it's alive. That's the... Yeah. Yes?
I have heard
yeah.